Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Welcome back to Tennis Connected Studios for May 14th, 2017. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to preview the Italian Open from Rome and review the Madrid Open from Spain. Before we begin this week's show, let's introduce our co-host Parsa. How are you this week, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing really well. You know, had an awesome final today with Rafa taking his third straight tournament, as well as his, 52nd clay court title. I mean, the guy's just, he's rolling this year, three tournaments in a row, completely dominating the dirt this year in 2017. Took out into my, to my mind, and I'm sure a lot of other people, second best clay court of this year, Dominic Thiem in the finals. And then yesterday we had Halep defending her title from last year over Mikdonovic, so that was great effort by her. So we'll get into some of that action before we get into previewing Rome. So Parsa, let's recap the men's final today. We had Rafa, pretty, you know, it was a great match. You know, for those who saw it out there, great baseline exchanges. You had, you know, Nadal with his, you know, moving so well and just so confident now because he's played so many tournaments in a row. And I think you knew after he beat Djokovic yesterday, after losing to him, you know, seven times in a row, that he was going to be there today, and there was no way he was losing this match. Even though Thiem had some great chances, he, you know, he, it took him five set points to lose that first set and for Nadal to win it, and then a couple match points in the second set. So a lot of drama there. Really like what I saw from Thiem, and I have no doubt that, you know, Dominic Thiem is going to win a couple Grand Slams by the end of the day, and by the end of his career, it's probably going to be a couple Frenches. He's got an amazing kick serve, very tenacious guy, very fit. And he's figured it out. I think with him, because he's still so young, he can play a lot, but he's going to have to manage his schedule better just to peak exactly when he has. And so, Parsa, before we get into the match today, I just want to one of your views on Thiem here. Do you think he's a type of player like Nadal that has to play a lot in order to gain form? Or is that just something that he does right now, but he doesn't necessarily need to do?
First of all, that's a great point that you made. You know, he's going to learn that periodization to peak right at that time for the French. So that's an excellent point you made. In terms of how he has to prepare, I do think he is the kind of guy who has to play a lot, and only for one reason, because he's always done it. And that's the reason. You are a creature of habit, and you do become somebody who, if you've had success, you try to follow the same things that have gotten you there. So it'll be, if there is a change in the way he manages his schedule and his body, it would be a gradual thing. It would never be a all of a sudden, you know, type of thing that would put doubt into his head that there may be too big of a change or something like that. It would be maybe one less tournament or a half hour less or whatever it is. But this is the new wave of what it takes to be on this, on the tour now. Even tournament weeks or training weeks. Those guys are out there, and the women are out there just grinding away, constantly trying to improve, because that's the bar that's been set. And so everyone's chasing Nadal in the dirt, and Thiem seems to be number two this year, getting there, and it does look very, very good. I mean, he's very good against everyone except for the King of Clay. And speaking about Nadal, I mean, you can see the belief, the confidence, that resiliency is back. And when that's back, that's when Nadal's at his best. And you know that the shots are going to improve and they're going to continue to get better, and he's going to put in the work. But when he believes that he's going to make the shot, he's just, he becomes that greatest of all time type of player. You know, versus a great champion, he goes to one of the best ever. If you can even sort of draw a distinction between the two, which I'm trying to do, he just becomes unstoppable.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that I noticed from Nadal is his footwork is tremendous right now. And he's pulling the trigger in rallies a little bit sooner than he normally would. And that to me is a sign that he's feeling good, because he knows he can. He's at a position now where he's not shanking a lot anymore like he was last year. He can put so many balls back deep and a lot like landing right in or right around the baseline. But then he's put, you know, some really nice backhand down the lines that he did against Djokovic. I don't know if you saw his match against Goffin, but I mean, just incredible. Like, he hit some down the line on the run passing shot winners that one game, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, maybe the 10th game of the second set or something like that. It was just incredible stuff. And Goffin hit that one, you know, like 360 backhand cross-court angle. And then Nadal had a couple down the line, forehands and backhand. It was just one of the best games I've ever seen in a long time. But he's feeling it right now. And another thing that I've noticed is on the ad side, his slice serve out wide is really biting a lot more. Instead of kind of, you know, that slower type of spin when it hits the court and it jumps off, it's really knifing through the court now, which is giving him, you know, a little bit more of a shorter return as his first strike in the point, and then he's all over it and then he's dictating. So that's all great signs for him. So Parsley, you know, Nadal, it's all great. You know what I mean? He won 10th Monte Carlo, 10th Barcelona title, 5th in Madrid. This is, as we all know, his worst Masters 1000 on clay, just because of the altitude and all that stuff that goes with it. But the question that now bodes here is, moving into Rome, is he at 30? He's going to be 31 at the end of the month, I believe, right? Is he playing too much? Or, you know, Justin Gibelstob made a good point that, you know, Nadal has to play a lot. This is when he starts feeling his best, like a Pat Rafter, right? Does he, you know, keep, like, say he wins Rome, does he go into the French Open with too much tennis under his belt, or is there no such thing as too much tennis, you know, for Rafa Nadal?
He probably goes, wins the French, and then could even maybe force his way into a deep run at Wimbledon, and then he's pretty much done. He'll end up getting hurt or something will happen. That's historically what happens. So
yes,
I'm only following that. You know, whether it's his knees flaring up or whatever it is, but you know, we'll see. Who knows? He may follow Federer's trend. You know, maybe he'll play the Open and then shut it down. You know, come back for the tour final and that's it. You never know. It'll be interesting to see how it all unfolds. But a healthy Rafa is great for us. I love it. So I hope he stays there. I hope Djokovic comes back. And I hope we get some of these young guns in there. Like, how awesome would it be to see, like, a team Djokovic quarterfinal at the French Open when both are firing, you know?
For sure.
It's enticing stuff. You know, I hate that the reason why we don't have better quarterfinal matches is because some guys are struggling or not playing or whatever it is. I just rather see it all, just everyone firing and trying to go after each other. I think it would make incredible, dramatic matches and things that, you know, I'd be really happy once the match is over in that I got to watch something really great. So, entertainment.
Yeah, and it's such an interesting time right now, because you got a guy like Alex Zverev, who, you know, won in Munich the week before, followed it up with a, you know, quarterfinal performance this week, playing some great tennis. Then you had Goffin, who's just been solid, you know, this whole season. And then, I mean, Rafa's been playing as well as he has. And then you have guys like Djokovic and Murray, who are struggling for their level. I mean, Murray is just in a serious funk right now. There's no doubt about that. I don't know what's going on with him. He doesn't look particularly injured to me at this point. I don't know. Like, the thing is, he played so well to end the year. And we talked about this last week, Parsa. He still must be feeling that mentally. Because, again, as like a Djokovic, I don't see anything technically that has really broken down or that's off. They're both still fit as a fiddle, you know, both Djokovic and Murray. But, you know, Djokovic, to me, I think it's more mental. Murray, I think it's a little bit more fatigue. It's more mental fatigue. I think Djokovic is more like, you know, he's been rattled a little bit in whatever capacity that it is. And it's just, it's tough for him right now to really hone in on that X factor that, you know, just separated him this time last year. He was just rolling guys. And the year before that, and the year before that. And, you know, now he's got to kind of dig his way back into that. He said that, you know, he's going to have a coach by the French, or right after the French. So it's not too far off. But let me remind you that he has finals points to defend this week. Doesn't get there, he's going to lose points just like he did this week. And then the big one is coming at Roland Garros, where he's got 2,000 points to defend there. So, you know, if he doesn't make at least a quarter, I mean, the thing is, there's such a big gap between, you know, rounds. So if you make the quarters compared with the 2,000 points, I don't know how many points it is for making the quarters. I'm just going to guess it's maybe 180 points, something like that. But when you compare that to 2,000 points, it's almost nothing, right? Like, it's not like obviously losing first round, but he's going to have a lot to think about there. Doesn't have a lot to defend after that. Didn't do much at Wimbledon. He won the Rogers. Cincy, he didn't do that well. And then US Open, he made the finals, which was great, but he wasn't playing his best. So he's got a lot of points to defend. So we don't know. We really don't know what his level is going to be. And then you have a guy like Murray, who, again, is a little bit lost at this point, and we just hope they can rebound this week. Moving off to the women before we get into the Rome draw, really nice to see Halep, you know, putting in the hard yards and getting that title. Always liked her game style, and I really like her coach, Darren Cahill. He's a class act, and what they're doing is fantastic. You know, Kiki Mladenovic played an amazing tournament as well, too. She's had a great year. Could be a sleeper for the French Open for me. No question about it. It's just, you know, is she able to prevail, you know, with the French crowd there? And there's a lot of pressure, as we know, with the French players. And historically, they haven't really, you know, bode well at that arena. So we'll see how that transpires. Before we move on to Rome, Barca this week, do you have any final thoughts on what happened with Madrid?
Yeah, I mean, Halep was very telling for me, Nima.
Yes.
You know, the altitude quickened up the pace and became an athletic battle with a quicker ball moving through the court, but not a hard court quicker battle where others can get set and really hammer the ball. Here, it's a matter of who has the best footwork, and then you can speed the ball through the air and through the court. So I think that's very telling. I mean, if I told you that, I mean, what would you think that she would need to do on a hard court or on a grass court?
What, in what sense? Like, what kind of tactics you would have to do?
Well, I don't think it's tactical, but I do have an idea of what I think needs to happen. And you know, meaning, look at the atmosphere and look how she dominates. So when it's a athletic, meaning you're sliding, you're changing direction, you have to be very fleet of foot, mm-hmm. and the conditions are fast, okay. She wins.
Yes.
This is the only event in the entire year that is played in these sort of conditions. So what does she need to do at sea level in, let's say, faster conditions in order to achieve a similar result?
That's a great question. I mean, I don't think she can actually, she necessarily will want to hit the ball any bigger. It could be a court positioning thing. You know what I mean? Maybe standing a little bit closer, because if she's that good of an athlete, then, you know, the coordination and movement and everything will be there. So, you know, she can use that to accentuate it on this type of a surface where, you know, she's sliding all over the place. It's a little bit slower. She, you know, she can get away with that. She's a little bit farther back, and she's proven that she's dynamite on this, but she's won Indian Wells as well, right? Which is a similar kind of thinner air type of environment. So she,
exactly.
She clearly plays well in those type of venues.
Exactly. And she trains in Vegas, probably, I'm assuming.
Yes, exactly.
So, you know, which is also similar conditions to Palm Springs. So that ball needs to move quickly through the court. So if you are able to find a way to increase her pace, so basically what you're saying, if I'm hearing you correctly, Nima, is from defensive positions or when she's further pushed around the court and the ball's moving quickly through the court, she's able to turn those defensive positions into offense because of that slight help from the air, and it's making all the difference for her. So they need that. That is it. If they're listening, like I just nailed it for them, they need to figure out the solution to it. And one of them could be, you know, changing strings, rackets, tensions, figuring out, you know, doing the analytics on it so that you can figure out what is that actual change, because that little change, whatever it is, I mean, if someone wants to do it, if they're bored, they can do it. I don't have the time to do it, but maybe Halep will pay a firm to do it like Murray does with his analytics type stuff, because it could be a worthwhile investment. You know, figure out how to get that ball to move through the court at sea level like it does in altitude, and maybe you got something.
Well, when you look at a guy like Diego Schwartzman, right, one of the shortest guys on the ATP, and you know, for those of you who you know are diehards and you've been watching a lot during the clay court season, you've seen him play some great matches against Rafa, against Goffin and stuff like that. And you know, he's not a big guy at all. He's only about 5'7". He's around my height. But the great thing that he does is he's right on that baseline. Doesn't matter, you know, and he's just taking off to, like, boom, boom, boom. You know what I mean? Just half falling everything and taking, you know, creating energy by creating a very dominant court positioning, even though he's not a dominant figure. You know what I mean? And that's, and Halep is in the same mold. She's not a big player. She's not like Sharapova out there, you know, like towering over the court or whatever. So she needs, pardon me, what Halep needs to do is, I think court positioning is going to be a key thing for her. And you can, a lot of players do that. I mean, look at Agassi. I mean, how good was he with his court positioning, right? You look at Stan when he's playing his best tennis. You know, he's serving big, and then he's already a foot and a half inside the baseline, and then, you know, rocking that backhand cross court. Done.
The problem with court position for her,
yeah,
is that maybe her strokes aren't set up to take the ball earlier, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that's why from those defensive positions, that ball quickens through the air there. You know, that's going to be the interesting thing. You know, I'd be interested to hear what Darren Cahill says, to be honest.
Yeah, that's a fantastic, you know, that's one of the most interesting things actually that I've heard resulting from her game. But it's a similar thing to, you know, Kvitova, pardon me, where, you know, she's won Wimbledon a couple times, she won Madrid, but then you always see her struggling on slower surfaces. So now you have a player who excels on faster surfaces. How do you get her to excel on slower surfaces? So it's an interesting dynamic where, you know, what would she have to do, right? Like, I mean, we can get into that maybe in another show when she's actually back at the French and stuff like that. But there's so many different things. But Halep, to me, because she's a little bit of a smaller player and she moves so well, her adaptivity towards other surfaces, I think, is a little bit easier than a bigger player. You know what I mean? Because movement is such a big part of tennis. And, you know, she moves so well that her ability to adapt, I think, is a little bit easier than a taller player. So We'll put our hard hats on for that one, and we'll come up with an answer hopefully for next week, Barca.
And maybe send a tweet to Cahill. What do you think?
Yeah, that's perfect. We'll do that. I'll get on to that today or tomorrow. So, you know, Barca, now moving on to the Rome draw. It's led by struggling Andy Murray. He even said, you know, after he lost just last week in Madrid, that, you know what, there's a reason for me to be concerned. And you know what? There might be another reason for him to be concerned, because he's playing hometown favorite, you know, Fabio Fognini, who, you know, cakewalked through his first round match today, 1-3. So I think that, you know, that's going to be probably a night match. So Rome's going to be hot this week. You know, you're looking at high 80s. So it's pretty toasty, and Madrid was pretty cold and rainy, and they had the roof closed a bunch of times. So I think it's a completely different ball game with very lively conditions. You know, Fognini, he loves playing in front of his hometown crowd. He's a big match player. He's shown that in the past by beating Nadal at the U.S. Open and other events. So he loves these kind of moments, and he's a showman. You know what I mean? And so I think that's going to be a good one. That's going to be a cracker for me. When you look a little bit ahead in this quarter, you have Milos Raonic, who's there. You know, Goffin, you know, cleaned his clock pretty early in Madrid last week, and Goffin's been, I mean, on fire. He's, I think, top five in the world right now for me. And, you know, Milos is another super professional guy, but is he ready yet? And this is arguably his worst surface, and he's got the, you know, Thomas Burdick in the third round, so I think that's going to be tough, you know, for him to navigate through. And, you know, for that reason, it's tough. I mean, I don't want to go against Murray because he's the number one player in the world. And Parsa, let's not forget, the defending champion of this event. So that's a very crucial thing here. Does he go out early? This is his last chance to get any sort of confidence needed for Roland Garros. I got to go with Murray. I mean, I would be shocked if he doesn't make the semifinals here. I don't care how bad he's playing. He's got to make the semis, right? You know, what's your thoughts?
I mean, it's hard to tell, right? He didn't play that much in Madrid, and Madrid's got weird conditions, so
yeah,
you can't really tell. But I think he'll be scratching and clawing, and maybe it'll help him be to be be in that villain role a little bit will help him. It'll help him fight the outside instead of fight himself. So, I mean, he definitely, you know, and it could also be that type of thing where you get those good vibes. You know, you get on that court, you won on that court last year, and you start to feel those same feelings again. So tennis is very obviously a very momentum-filled game, and it's so much about where you think you are and what you feel. And so, yeah, I think it's hard to root against or pick against the number one player in the world, but look out for that match. That could be an upset right in the beginning.
Okay. So who are you taking to make the semis in this quarter?
I'm taking Mr. Andy Murray.
Okay, perfect. Moving on to quarter number two, we have Stan Wawrinka, who lost to his good buddy Benoit Paire. I mean, you know, Wawrinka is a head-scratcher for me, man. I mean, last week I had him winning the event. He lost his first match. I also had Team making the semis, which he did. I had Nadal making the semis, which he did. And I had Djokovic making the semis, which he did. So I went 3-for-4. I didn't get the winner. And then I had actually Djokovic and Stan in the finals, which didn't happen, with Wawrinka winning, which obviously didn't happen. So what do I do with Stan the man this week? He could, again, potentially could face Paire in the second round. You would likely see that happening because Paire's playing Nicolas Mahou, who's been playing pretty well. You know, he's picked up a couple wins here and there on the clay this spring. But, I mean, for me, Paire is a much better clay quarter. So look for a rematch there. And you know Stan's going to come in and not wanting to lose to his buddy 2 weeks in a row. Isner pulled out a great win today against Ramos Vinolas, Monte Carlo finalist. Great win for, you know, John on this stuff. I mean, it was 3 sets, but the third set he won 6-1. So anytime you can beat a guy like Ramos Vinolas 6-1 in the third set, you know that guy's not tired. He can run for days. So that's a fantastic effort by him. And John plays well here. I think he had a decent run here last year too. So, you know, maybe watch out for him. I don't think he's going farther than the quarters. But in order to do that or not to do that, he's going to have to take out the likes of Cilic, who's the 6th seed, Verdasco, who won today easy against Donald Young. And then we have my boy David Goffin, who's just been lighting it up this spring. Love what he's doing. He's maximizing his game. He really knows what he needs to do. Such a clean ball striker is the Belgium. And for me, I'm going to go with Goffin to make the semis here. I think that he's got the right mindset. He's fit. He's very light. He's probably one of the thinnest guys on tour. I think he's about a 150 or something like that. I mean, he's about 5'11 too, so he's not that small. And, I mean, listen, he's playing really well. And I think it's going to take a major force, like a guy like Rafa or Djokovic, somebody of that level, you know, the top guys to defeat him here. And I think that's why I'm going with Goffin to make the semifinals. Who do you have in this quarter?
I mean, that's a super interesting pick, huh? Goffin. And then your logic behind it was just so compelling. I mean,
that's how I do it, man.
Yeah, that's how you do it. And I'm going to go completely in some weird direction because that's what I'm feeling for this section. I'm not feeling anyone in this section. So when I go weird, you know, there's only one weird, and that's Cilic. You know, he's got a 6 next to his ranking. You know, he's ranked 7 in the world or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason for it, and that's because he beats up on or takes advantage of draws that are available to him. And
yes.
This looks like one where do have that opportunity, and I'm gonna have Cilic for no good reason other than there is nothing clear cut going on, and it to be different than you, to be honest, because Goffin is probably the informed guy in the section.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, this looks like Goffin may not even get there. You know, Bellucci's tough right off the bat, Verdasco's tough, he may get beaten up a little bit, and then I can see Cilic coming up and cleaning house, so we'll see. But yeah, I got Murray and Cilic so far.
Okay, moving on to quarter three, we have a team who's just, you know, made 2 finals in a row. So what, you know, what's his fitness level going to be like? That's going to be an interesting one. And then we have the undisputed king of clay, and I mean, I don't think anybody's going to disagree right now. The number one and only favorite to win Roland Garros this year would be an absolute shocker if he didn't. Rafa Nadal. Nadal opens against Almagro or Seppi. Both could be very formidable opponents. I think that could be a close one regardless of who it is, just based on the fact that Nadal's adjusting to, again, another surface. He's probably going to come out on Wednesday. They're going to give him a couple of days off to regroup from Madrid and, get ready on completely, you know, completely different sea level conditions that are very similar to France. And then from there, we got Jack Sock, who you know is going to want to do something after losing his first match in Madrid. But he's got Schwartzman. And Schwartzman is not, I mean, Jack's going to have to completely overpower him there because, I mean, you know, Diego's not going to give him anything. He's going to give him absolutely nothing. And then you have Wesley, who is, again, probably one of his best surfaces is clay. Queries in this section. I really like Lucas Pouille. So there's a couple guys here, for me, that could do some damage here. I mean, because you have, you know, Pouille, who is, I really like what he does because he's a very professional guy, works hard, he's very fit, very strong guy, young guy too, so he's, you know, he's not going to get tired. And then, I mean, Nadal for me is going to the semis. It's just who's going to be able to challenge him in this quarter, who's going to be the second best player, and is it going to be team? Could be, but he's, this is not something that he's used to, right? Making finals every week. Nadal's used to this. He's been doing it for a decade, right? So it's going to be tough, but I'm going to have to go with, you know, Rafa for sure making the semifinals here. What do you have?
Yeah, I mean, you said something important a few moments ago. You said it was hot in Rome this week. Whew. Hot means that ball's going to bounce, boy.
Yeah.
And that's got to be. The first thing you said was it's going to be mid-80s, and I'm like, Rafa. Who's going to beat him? Rafa all the way, forget it. Do we even need to discuss it?
Yeah, that's a good point. But, you know, give people what they want. And then analyzing the fourth quarter, we have Nishikori, who had to withdraw once again, Parsa. And I feel bad for Kai because, you know, such a professional guy, amazing ball striker. We talked about this at the end of last year where, you know what, you were saying some great stuff where, you know, this guy hits the ball earlier than Djokovic and Murray. He doesn't have as good of a serve as those two guys, but he returns amazing. He moves amazing. And his groundies are super clean early. You know, such a gifted guy, amazing hands. But he can't stay fit. You know, it's either his shoulder, it's his knee, it's his hamstring, it's his wrist. And who knows? I mean, does he even get that far? He's got either Ferrer, who's been struggling like crazy this year, has won a couple matches in recent weeks. Feliciano Lopez, who's starting to look his age a little bit. Hate to say that, but it does look like he might be headed just, you know, onto the doubles court. Even though he's got a pretty good singles ranking, he hasn't done much this year, so we've got to monitor that. Interesting for me, and, you know, crackerjack match tomorrow is Dimitrov against Del Potro. That's just going to be, I mean, if you have a ticket for that, how can you complain, right? You sit there, you're in Italy, you're in Rome, statues all around you watching those two guys. I mean, that's just pretty awesome. So does Del Potro make a run here? Does he get by Dimitrov? I think he can. I think he can beat Grigor here. You know, I will never put, you know, for me, Del Potro is one of those guys who has such a, you know, such passion for the sport. And he just has so many X factors and he just has that hammer forehand. That he can just, you know, he can knock you out. He's just, it's no question about it. So I'm tempted to, you know, slot Del Potro into the semis here. The reason why I won't is because clay is probably his worst surface. And he hasn't really played, right? Because his grandfather passed away. So he had to pull out of Estoril. He didn't play in Madrid. So how much, you know, backing does he have here? And Dimitrov, you know, he's won some matches in the last couple of weeks. So it's going to be a close one there. But What's going to happen here? I mean, I heard Kyrgios talking on the sidelines when I was watching the coverage with Sock the other day when they beat the Bryan brothers, that he was basically saying, I have no chance, you know, in Rome this week. My hip is screwed up and, you know, I'd love to play doubles and whatever. So I don't think Kyrgios is going to do much this week. And he's got a rough, rough first round against Bautista Agut, who's, I think, maybe on clay, the last guy you want to play in the first round. Just because he's not going to miss, and he's in form. This guy's almost top 20 player, right? Like this guy's not going anywhere. So that's going to be a rough one for Kyrgios. And then we have Djokovic. And then Djokovic is, you know, defending finalist, won here on countless occasions, you know, 30 Masters, 1000s, 12-time Grand Slam winner, but not playing like one these days, Parsa. So what does Nole come up with? And he needs a result here too, just like Murray. Nadal doesn't. But that doesn't mean he's not going to go out there and try to win this as well. So with everything put into consideration, Parsa, and you have Del Potro here, who I would like to see do well, and Nishikori, if he can, you know, get going physically. Everybody's last turn here, basically, before the French. I'm going to go with Djokovic, semifinals against Nadal. What do you have?
How sick are every seed of seeing Del Potro still unseeded? I mean, it just must be awful. You look at it on you're playing against Del Potro first round. It's a nightmare. Who wants to play that guy? Hoping that he gets his ranking to the point where he gets seeded and we can see him make deep runs week in and week out, because he doesn't have to play a top 10 player right off the bat. So look forward to that moment. And I agree with you. I think Djokovic is still Djokovic. Even when we're talking about him being a little bit down mentally, he's still a top 5 player down mentally. So he just needs that little bit of an edge. And I think he's going to build up hope and build up steam again to that semifinal against Nadal. And we're going to see how that one's going to play out. I've got my own idea. I'm sure you've got your own idea, but I don't know. I'm going to go Djokovic in the bottom here.
Yeah, and I think that now that we have our picks, I'm going to go with Goffin upsetting Murray in the top half semi to make the finals. And then I have Nadal defeating Djokovic, because I think Djokovic's best chance to defeat Nadal on clay leading up to the French was in Madrid last week, and he didn't do it there. So I think Nadal's going to be feeling good and knowing that he can do it now. And if he gets that semi again, I don't think he's losing this tournament. So I'm going to go with Nadal over Djokovic. And then in the finals, going to have something like 7-5, 6-4 for Nadal over Goffin in the finals. What do you have?
Yeah, and I'm going to have Murray advancing to the final in the top half over Cilic. And I'm going to have Rafa really just making Rome his arena of defeat for his opponents, meaning that they're all going to go into Roland Garros defeated, because there's no one that's going to beat this guy. So he's going to beat Djokovic, number 2 in the world, and he's going to go and beat Murray in the final, number 1 in the world. And he's going to just, put those feet up, and he's probably going to end up playing Federer in the Roland Garros final and just hitting high, heavy balls to his back and all day. Who knows, Nima? Yeah. Would love to see it just because the year has been this way. But as far as Rome goes, I've got Rafa going all the way here.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, buddy. Okay, so moving now to the women's draw, we have struggling top seed Angie Kerber. She's got a bye, then plays a couple qualifiers to play Sharapova, potentially, or Lucic Baroni. Do you see Sharapova getting through Christina McHale in her first match there?
That's a tough one. To be honest, Christina McHale's going to put a ton of balls on the court.
Yes.
And she's definitely not going to beat herself. So Sharapova's going to have to be on. But I look at it as the type of match that if Sharapova does get through, she's going to have quite a bit of a rhythm, and that's dangerous for her next opponent.
Yeah, and remember, she won this tournament in 2015, so she can play here. She's had some great results here. She loves this, this tournament in the city, and she's feeling good vibes out there, and seems very positive to me, in this state. And let's see if she can get by, that Bouchard match last week, which we haven't talked about. We'll get into that in a second here. So we have. Halep is here, so she's going to be riding a high wave. But again, just like we talked about extensively, does she adjust here? That's great. You won, Madrid. What are you going to do now here? And she's got a Sigmund potentially, or a Sako who hits a huge ball in the second round. Pavlyuchenkova, who's trains out of the Mouratoglou Academy, who's a great player. So there's that in this section as well to deal with. I think from a feel-good perspective, we had Safarova as well here. I think I'm going with Sharapova to make the semifinals. I feel pretty good about that. I think she's going to say, listen, guys, I like this tournament. I'm feeling good here. She's just going to come in and do her thing. Who do you have in this section?
I mean, Christina McHale is a great first-round matchup in that she can get that rhythm. And if she can get through that one, I don't see anything prohibiting her advancement to the semifinal. It's pretty cool in that she can really become one of the favorites for the French Open. All of a sudden, she becomes that it person, the person that you think that, if a couple of things go her way, she can take the title right here and take the world by storm, right, Nima? We've been calling for somebody on the women's side to be a star, to come out and be consistent week in and week out. And could it be Sharapova after all of this, after all this sort of accusations of what's the right word, Nima? They were hunting for somebody, for a big name, to make an example of her, for her to get that vindication and then have that revenge. Can she begin her start or her start to the top of the world again? I mean, who knows? Which, on those heels, what do you think about Eugenie and Sharapova and all that little drama going on?
Well, yeah, listen, I think they handled it both pretty well. I'm actually really proud of Sharapova, you know, very classy at the end. I mean, Bouchard, I mean, her handshakes really need some work, man. Win or lose, like, she needs to, you know, like, just look at somebody and say, good match. Look at Venus Williams, you know what I mean? Look at some of the other great champions that we've had in this sport. Even Sharapova, she doesn't look away when she's shaking her hand. Like, oh, look at Djokovic, look at Nadal, look at Federer, look at Murray. I mean, these are people who have won, like, light years more than Eugenie Bouchard, right? And, you know, I'm going to get into some of the good stuff with her, but she's definitely need to work on that. And I went through this draw again, and I took a double take. She's not in this tournament. And I think what happened was, you know, there's the cutoffs are usually about 6 weeks before or something like that, right? So she probably, you know, didn't have a high enough ranking to get in at that stage, as she did for Madrid, because I do not, if I'm mistaken here, I do not see Bouchard in this tournament at all. So, but anyways, getting back to what she did last week, I mean, tremendous tournament of the last 3 years for her, you know, since making the finals of Wimbledon. I mean, that was just an incredible effort by her. And, you know, she showed what she can do. I mean, pretty disappointing to get bageled by Kuznetsova there. But with that, putting that aside, she beat Kerber, she beat Cornet, she beat Sharapova, you know, playing with a lot of guts and determination. So, love to see it. I mean, listen, Bouchard is a big name. I mean, the better she does, ratings are going to go up, fans are going to be flocking more, and, you know, everybody gets more interested. That's just the way, that's the nature of the beast here. So, I'm all for her doing well, and I like when she plays well. I don't mind watching her play. Like, she plays a good game. She hits the ball early. I think her serve still needs to improve. But she's got good court positioning, not the best mover out there, but, you know, she hits the ball super early and, you know, great, you know, direction change of the ball when she needs it. And, you know, let's see how it pans out for her in potentially her next tournament at the French Open. But moving now to quarter number two, we have Sibulkova, who's, you know, great clay quarter, but she hasn't done much in recent weeks. And I've been picking her, but she's not doing anything. So maybe I got to shy away from that. You know, we have other players like Kiki Berkins and Madison Keys, who's going to be looking for some form going into the French Open. But, you know, lo and behold, we have, you know, the veteran Svetlana Kuznetsova, who's just been playing some dynamite tennis so far this year. And that's, for me, good enough for me to take her to a face-off against Sharapova in the semifinals. Who do you have?
I mean, what a terrific pick, Nima. You know, Kuznetsova, you know, you were bringing her up versus Bouchard there, and you know, she's the ultimate professional, the one who doesn't waste an ounce, and you know, and classy in terms of respectful of the game. So you brought her up, and I thought that was a great thing that you said there. In terms of this section, I'm looking for someone to step up, as I do every week. For me, the one that catches my eye is Sibulkova. I don't know why. I think that she has, especially if it's a little bit hotter, I think that that ball is going to be moving through the court, yet she can handle the movement on the court. And so, Kuznetsova still needs, I think, the conditions to be just a bit slower for her to be successful. So I think for that reason, I'm going to go with Sibulkova and a little bit of a risk there.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be a risk. She's got a great game for clay. She's so fit, you know, very low to the ground player. So, you know, she can take the ball.
Best five in the world.
Yeah, and that's exactly. I mean, she's playing amazing. So, you know, let's see how she, you know, what happens for her this week. Moving on to quarter number three, we have Jo Konta, who, again, we would like to see her build on her Miami title. Hasn't done so thus far during the spring. We have Muguruza, who Parsa, let's not forget, defending French Open winner, hasn't done much. So, you know, she's looking for some form. Venus Williams, you know, coming back to the clay this week as number 9 seed. Kiki Mihajlovic, who's number 13 seed. Shelby Rogers, American. Yankovic, Julia Georges, who's, you know, named from the past. A lot of players here. I mean, Monica Puig, gold medal winner. So there's some players here. And, you know, what's going to happen here? I would like to see Konta do some damage in this draw. I think she's good for the game, and she can, you know, she plays, you know, obviously for the UK and Great Britain, and, you know, it's a big market there. So it'd be great to see her do some great things, especially on the dirt here, where historically they haven't done as well. But then you have somebody like Muguruza, who you would think that she should be able to get through this quarter, right? Like, why shouldn't she make the semifinals here?
She hasn't been playing that well.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. So there's an opportunity here. I mean, great players here, paper wise. Like if you're looking at it from that capacity, but I really don't know. I mean, I think for me, I'm gonna go with Konta, just because I think, you know what? Actually, this is probably one of the first times I'll ever do that. I'm gonna scratch that pick because I'm not feeling it, because I know she's not gonna do it here. I don't think Kiki's going to be able to get to the semis again. And does, maybe, I don't know. I'm going to go with Yankovic. I think maybe she comes out, you know, out of the woodwork here and has a deep run. So I'm going to go with Yelena Yankovic to make the semifinals.
I'm chuckling a bit. I'm sorry, yeah. Nima. Yeah. I just, you know, it becomes hard to sort of pick what's going to happen out of here. I had Muguruza last week, I think, doing some damage, and that didn't pan out. You know, gosh. For the lack of a better choice, I'm going to go with Muguruza again. Let's see if she burns me 2 weeks in a row, then I'll know not to pick her for Roland Garros.
Yeah, that's pretty much how we have to play it these days. Okay, and then our fourth and final quarter for this week, before we wrap things up, we have Pliskova, who is not going to do much here, Parsa. She's not a clay quarter. So for anybody, you know, looking to you know cash in on her, don't even bother, in my opinion. Then we have Svitolina, who, again, good clay quarter. I'm taking her right now to make the semis before I break down the rest of this quarter. We have Vesnina, who I don't think is going to do much. You know, Sara Errani, wild card, you know, really creeping towards the latter stages of her career. You know, no serve, amazing heart, pretty good ground strokes. And she's playing in Italy. So does she do something here? Definitely a potential for that. And you know she's not going to go down without a serious fight. But, you know, Svitolina for me is the informed player of this quarter, playing some great tennis. And it's for that reason that I take her to reach the semifinals. And what do you have?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a complete wild card. And I'm going to say that Carla Suarez Navarro. I think either her or Lauren Davis, whoever wins that match, I think is going to actually make the semi here.
That's a great pick. I like that one. Actually, I missed Suarez Navarro, and she's dynamite on the surface. Made the finals here a couple of years ago in 2015. Lost to Sharapova. You know, she's a dirt baller, and she's going to, I think,
and she's been ranked high before. Yeah. So she knows, she definitely has that. She's going to look at this and say, opportunity, opportunity, opportunity. You know, I mean, even if she did get there, her semi's winnable. So, that's for me, Suarez Navarro.
Okay, and now going back to the top of the draw, I have Kuznetsova over Sharapova in the semis. I have Svitolina over Yankovic in the semis. And then I have Kuznetsova winning this title over Svitolina. What do you have?
Yeah, I'm going to have Sibylkova advancing over Sharapova. And then I'm going to have Sibylkova defeating Garbine Muguruza in the final.
Love it. So that's it. Okay. So Parsa, for everybody out there, Parsa and I will be back next week to review the Roma Masters. Pardon me, not the Roma Masters, the Italian Open, because it is a dual event. We're not just reviewing the men here. And then as we get ready for Roland Garros the week after. So gear up for that. In the meantime, make sure to check out all the coverage we have on Tennis Connected, all of the draw previews and analysis, and our, you know, our ongoing podcasts and Twitter coverage, Instagram coverage, you name it. Parsa, thank you so much for joining us this week once again.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. Make sure to hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours for anybody who's heading down to Wimbledon and the U.S. Open later this year. Thank you once again for listening. Make sure to download this podcast for your Android or iTunes, whatever you have. We cater to you. Have a fantastic week. Enjoy Italy.